Thought I'd just kind of start off and really want to just thank a couple of the folks that helped me with this. Chris Main, our cotton specialist, kind of helped me with this. Angela Thompson, our corn soybean specialist. And Jason Norsworthy over in Arkansas, who did a lot of the screening for our giant ragweed to see if it was tolerant or resistant. I thought I'd really just kind of focus on three resistant weeds. And I think in Tennessee, for sure, these are by far the most impactful we have in the state. But I think in a bigger sense, just for the Mid-South, these three, I think, are probably up with the most acres and are the most problem right now, and particularly the Palmer pigweed, going to be a major concern as we go forward. The first one that we ran into, as Darren mentioned in 2001, was mare's tail or horseweed. In Tennessee, we're basically no-till. And what folks did prior to 2001, 2002, was just go out with quarter Roundup, drop the planter, and away they went. About 2002, 2003, this is what they started seeing in these fields. And it was kind of amazing in that, you know, folks would kind of see it on their neighbors, but wouldn't think much about addressing it on their fields until the next year. And then we'd start getting calls and get calls to look at something like this. Well, there isn't a lot you can do at that point. I think just in general for everybody in the Mid-South, I think we had feel fairly comfortable with controlling it and the recommendations we currently have. And they really center around clarity. Glyphosate and clarity has really been the standard. And for the most part, it's worked well. Now, in 2006 and 2007, we did have a few hiccups. And I think a lot of it had to do, we had very dry soil conditions, and I don't think any of us really realized, because dicamba is primarily used in corn post, just what impact you pick up with dicamba from the roots. And I think that was one reason it really showed out in 06 and 07, we got some inconsistent control from it. And I think we weren't picking it up through the roots because the soil was so dry. Also, folks were just getting closer and closer to planting to put their dicamba out. And under that aspect, the horseweed was getting big. Most of the ones that were escaping, the ones that were really large, had tap roots, foot and a half long, and almost all of them probably germinated the previous fall. And those are the ones we're having the hardest time killing. The other thing was just the pressure. When we first started in 2002, a bad field would have been 4 or 5 horseweed per square foot. By 2005, we were seeing 25, 30 horseweed per square foot. So the population was getting a lot more intense. So a lot of those things came into play, and I think there were reasons dicamba wasn't working quite as well as what we would expect. So folks would go out with that Roundup dicamba application, and you know, they do fairly good. I mean, they still get 80% control, but in some cases it still wasn't good enough. And then we were starting to get some follow-up calls on that. And really the major recommendation I tell folks is really centered on this, on managing glyphosate-resistant mare's tail. This is in soybeans, but it could be in cotton as well. It's just go out early. February is the time we need to go out and put dicamba out there. Even early March, I'll take that in Tennessee. If we start getting closer to planting, mare's tail gets big, it gets harder to try and get application on it and get it controlled. That's easier said and written on paper than done, however. This last year, I think in February and early March, we had like 3 days you could spray. It was either way too windy or it was too wet, had a lot of issues there. So, you know, we're even looking at some things and some fall applied. Jason just talked about some of that, and some of that looks like it has good application for mare's tail. The other one that's really starting to, I've gotten a number of calls on the last several years is giant ragweed and controlling glyphosate resistant giant ragweed. Picture there, that's Chris Main, that's our cotton specialist, and I'm glad we have a tall cotton specialist. He's well over 6 foot tall. Had I went out there, you wouldn't see me. But the dark green in the back there is the crop. And this has really become a concern because there isn't a lot you can do when this thing really gets rolling in a field. Once you got it, it's hard to do anything with. I'm basically going to need to go to corn or grain sorghum, something like that. What's happening, though, this giant ragweed isn't spreading. Mare's tail spread, it had windblown seed and quickly moved across the field. And it just seemed like it spread like wildfire, at least in Tennessee. Moved across the state basically in 3 years. Giant ragweed's moving a lot slower, and it's a lot more man-made being moved. This is real common, particularly in our Mississippi River bottoms, where folks are cleaning out their ditches and their waterways, dumping the soil in the field. Well, they're pulling the giant ragweed in the field. And then they just keep farming it like usual, keep hitting it with Roundup. Pretty soon, it's pretty much clear across the field. And just keep managing it with Roundup, and this is what your cotton field looks like. And this is some stuff we were seeing. Now, we went back in this, and obviously when we went to these fields, obviously they were glyphosate resistant. But in academic, we need to get things proved. And one thing we're really, you know, going into all this resistance is just finding weeds, a biotype of weeds that haven't been exposed to glyphosate, just to find out what the zero background level of tolerance is of these weeds out there. And Jason Norsworthy over in Arkansas, I think he had some from Bob Scott, collected some seed from Bob Scott over there. He had a very good base tolerance level of glyphosate, and we compared against those. And indeed, these were shown about fourfold resistance on this giant ragweed in these fields. We tried a number of things in cotton to try and manage giant ragweed. Basically, the best thing I found, we tried a number of pre's. A couple of years I tried to pre's, though we had real dry conditions. I couldn't get any of the pre's to work. I know a lot of you growers out there can know all about that. But going as far as post applications, we really got two things in cotton. We have staple and we have invoke. And threw these on there after about the sixth, seventh leaf of cotton. We got somewhere around 60-70% control. Basically, we didn't kill many, but we stunted them down. And the best thing was, they kind of got that yellow top, really slowed them up. But the big thing is we got some height difference between the cotton and the giant ragweed. Then we went out there, as far as just looking at what we found, it's a good 67% control. It's not going to be enough. Those stunted plants that I've shown you, they give them about a week, and they jump out of it and start regrowing. But if you can hit them with a hood with some Ignite, it did a fantastic job on them. Ignite on giant ragweed is fantastic when it's in the middle of summer and it's hot. And it's a real good program. Now, you go with a hooded application in this instance. Of course, if you had Liberty Link cotton, you could go over the top. Just kind of show you, this is kind of the end of the year. I went out and took this picture. But basically, I just ran down there with a hand boom and sprayed with, this is Invoke in this case. And then the farmer went out there with his hooded application. But you can tell where I stopped with the Invoke. Again, we could get over the top of them. We could do a good job. So Invoke and Staple provided enough giant ragweed suppression that we got some height difference. And then you can go over the top, in this case with Ignite. Of course, if you had a Liberty Link variety, you could just go over the top and do a pretty good job. At least in the Mid-South, though, our Liberty Link varieties just don't perform as well as our Roundup Ready and Roundup Ready Flexes. So a lot of growers aren't willing to jump and embrace that. The big thing on giant ragweed management right now, I mean, we're really in the early stages of it moving around, is keep it on the field edges. Don't let it move out in the field from the start. Do whatever you can to just take out those edges that are starting to creep in. Once you get it in your field in cotton, staple and invoke will at least stun it down some. And then, of course, you can go Ignite over the top. Another application that does work is Direx MSMA if you get, again, small weeds. The big one, and this is the one that kept me busy. I know it's kept Ken busy. It's kept a number of us busy this past year was just a big spread of glyphosate-resistant Palmer pigweed. It really took me by surprise just how wide it spread. Talk a little bit on the impact and just some thoughts on management. Up until this past year, we basically in Tennessee, we had three counties, about five fields that we had confirmed glyphosate-resistant Palmer pigweed. What we were seeing is we were having these pigweed grow, live through 44 ounces, but we were controlling them with 88. And to tell you the truth, we had a couple of years of this, and I was starting to feel a little bit good that maybe it wasn't going to spread. Then Kent Smith did a survey in Arkansas, and he was finding it in a bunch of fields. And that was the first thing I thought this year, that maybe things weren't going to play out like I was hoping they would. And lo and behold, they sure didn't. In 10 counties now in the state and hundreds of fields, we found glyphosate-resistant Palmer pigweed. A lot of it was small patches, as big as a truck. Some were as big as this room. Some were quite a bit bigger. And the level of resistance, the other thing that really surprised me is not just the spread, but the level of resistance is what really floored me. We went well in excess of 152 ounces around the WeatherMax, and it didn't do anything. Up until last, the biotypes we were looking at previously, it would at least check up the growth. You put 22 ounces on them, they'd live, but at least slow them down. We were putting huge rates on these. They didn't stop. They didn't stop growing. The other thing that kind of made this confusing is we're also seeing some water hemp along the rivers, some of the fields along the Mississippi River in particular, that are showing, they must be washed out from the Midwest, but they're showing some tolerance to glyphosate as well. And they're hard to tell apart. When they're little and first out of the ground, I don't think anybody can tell them apart. I don't know of anybody that can. When they're bigger and they flower out, that's when you can tell them apart. And I tell our growers, the way to tell water hemp and Palmer pigweed apart is when you see them flower out, and the flowering branches, if you can measure them in inches, it's water hemp. If you measure them in feet, it's Palmer pigweed. And that's the best way I know. In the big scheme of things, I don't know if it's going to make that big a deal. I don't know how much, you know, some of you I've probably read until you're sick of it, of Palmer pigweed in the press lately. But it is the king of the pigweeds as far as competition goes, and actually it's one of the most efficient weeds you'll ever going to run into. And I really think it's just going to stomp out the water hemp. I just don't think water hemp can compete with it. It's either going to cross it and breed it out or just run over it. It just grows so much quicker. This was the first call I got this year, and actually my back is against the Arkansas, it's the Mississippi River. I'm just sure the seed came from Arkansas, Ken, I have no doubt. These were two patches in this field. There were seven cotton rows wide. There was two patches in here, separated by about two football fields. And the grower went out there with 24 ounces of touchdown, did absolutely nothing to it, and he said, uh-oh. So he went out there and hit it with another 96 ounces 2 weeks later. And I took this picture of another 10 days after that. Just nothing. I knew we were in trouble. When the red vine in this field, that much touchdown beat up the red vine and didn't touch that Palmer pigweed that you can see there. You knew you were in trouble then. That was all I needed to know. We had a serious issue. Actually, Kenny Ham with Syngenta went out. He was so shocked by all this. He went out there with Gramoxone and Caprol and a spot sprayer and just nuked these spots. And I really wish more growers would have done this year on these spots that got away. I think in the long run, it's at least going to delay this moving around. And then the floodgates opened. I got call after call. And again, as I mentioned, some of these resistant spots of pigweed were the size of a pickup truck. Some were the size of several pickup trucks. Some were the size of a good-sized parking lot. And some took pretty much the whole field. About this point, in this one, you know, we're just trying to find things out. The grower said, well, what about, you know, putting something over the top? So I said, well, why don't we try some Invoke? No. So not only is this glyphosate resistant, it's ALS resistant as well. At this point in the whole process, I don't know, Stanley Culpepper in here, Alan York, I called those guys a lot on this. There he is. About this time in the process, I called Stanley, and I was not feeling all that good, and I described this field to him, and he goes, well, dude, you're screwed, is what he told me. So that didn't help much, and I knew that right off the bat, but I tell you what, he did give me a cocktail to put under a hood, and I liked it. At least we could see the rows. That's a pint of Direx, a quarter MSMA, and an ounce of Valor. And, you know, as I say, at least we could see the rows. I went out, this was a few days after they defoliated it. A lot of those big old pigweeds, you know, once they got seed set, they just lodged into the middle of the row. But that's what $61 worth of herbicide did on that field. That's obviously not sustainable. So kind of the impact of what we saw this year, some crop acres we had to destroy, as I showed in that picture. For the first time since I've been in Tennessee, we saw chopping crews out trying to take these out. Just first off the bat, folks trying to manage it, we're looking at another $20, $30 an acre, and that doesn't count some of the competition we're seeing from Palmer pigweed in these fields. So, you know, as far as managing it, I think a lot of it got moved around with some flood water. I know I read some comments from Ken there. And I think the same thing. I think we had some of the seed move around on flood water. But a lot of stuff Stanley's shown on pollen movement, I think that's the reason maybe we got blindsided. At least I got blindsided. I didn't think it spread as much as it had. But I think maybe that shed some light on why we're seeing it all over the place, it seems like, overnight. I tell our growers, now we have to assume basically all our Palmer is Roundup probably isn't going to control it. And we're going to have to start figuring on getting some pre's into the system, because that's the only way we're going to manage in cotton. There are some other things to consider. Rotation is one. Wheat double crop beans would be one rotation. Maybe more corn might be a rotation. I don't know the economics this year, how well corn's going to be a rotation with some of the input costs. Grain sorghum. For some of these soils, I know grain sorghum would be a good. It doesn't have as many herbicide options as corn, but it is better than, say, cotton or soybeans. As far as what do I recommend on cotton, well, I called Stanley on this. I called Alan York on you know, what are we looking at as far as managing these. And really right now we're looking at probably 2 ounces of Valor or Pine or Reflex 30 to 14 days before planting. Or something right behind the planter. Cotteran, Caprol, something like that. And or dual over the top. If you already have some like those pictures I showed with confirmed glyphosate resistance in the field, you're going to need at least two of these, if not three. And the reason I'm talking like that, and we're talking like this in Tennessee, we don't have a lot of irrigation. We're talking dry land. So you will put these out. You got three timings out there. You hope to catch a rain on one of them and get it activated. I don't know what else you can do. If you got a pivot, you know, you don't have near the worries. Just cut the pivot on, water it in, and you should be good to go. There's a lot of options lay-by, but you got to get to lay-by. You know, one of the concerns, I mentioned the big one, at least for us, without much irrigation is rainfall and the time to get these herbicides activated. We're going to have to start getting used to cotton injury again with these pre's. I think we all remember back before the Roundup Ready days that was common. It's going to be again. There's no really good over-the-top solution right now in the Roundup Ready system. Of course, the Liberty Link system is out there. There are some Liberty Link cotton varieties. But, you know, up until now, at least here in the Mid-South, they don't yield with some of our traditional Roundup Ready varieties. So with that, I'll cut her off here, and I don't know if I have time for a question, Jeff, or not. Yes, Jim. The question was the best control on a pre for Palmer pigweed, I take it.
Yeah.
Okay. Would be, well, probably Valor early up or Reflex before planting. They'd be fairly comparable. And then right behind the planter, it's probably going to be Caprol or Cotteran. It kind of depends on where you are in the world on that. In the Mid-South, we have better luck with Caprol on pigweed than they do in the Southeast. But okay.